Welcome to Golau, where we shed some light on politics, policy and polling in Wales and the world. On an otherwise unspectacular day in April 2017, the UK Prime Minister Theresa May stunned the political world by calling a snap election for the 8th of June. While many were caught off guard by the announcement, the same can't be said for the dedicated sophologists of the Wales Governance Centre at Cardiff University, who, as part of their work analysing public opinion in Wales and in conjunction with colleagues at ITV Wales and YouGov, have already undertaken their first Welsh political barometer poll of the campaign. And the results are extraordinary. Earlier, we caught up with Professors Roger Scully and Laura McAllister at the Wales Governance Centre to hear their initial reactions to these findings. Thanks for joining us, Roger. I understand you have a new poll out so swiftly after the snap election was called. Was that prescient on your part?
Actually, it was scheduled anyway, and we had no idea that Theresa May was going to call the general election. I wish I could claim great insight, but it was just one of those things of dumb luck that we had a poll that was due to go out and started the day after she called the election. But what that does mean is that all of the interviews for this were conducted subsequent to Theresa May's announcements. They were conducted on Wednesday to Friday of last week.
Okay. I wonder if I could ask for an overview of your findings.
Well, it's perhaps the most striking, if not shocking, Welsh poll that I've ever been involved in. We know that Wales has long been a country dominated electorally by the Labour Party. They've come first here in every general election from 1922 onwards. This poll shows the Conservative Party with a 10-point lead ahead of the Labour Party. You know, were the sort of results suggested by this poll to be repeated at the election in 6.5 weeks' time, then we would be seeing something of genuine historic importance. We'd see, you know, the Labour Party being defeated in Wales, the Conservatives winning the first election in Wales they would have won since the 1850s. I mean, no one has a living memory of seeing an election in Wales anything like the sort of result which is being suggested by this new poll.
So what are the factors that you see in the data that is boosting the Conservative support and damaging the Labour support?
One of the things that's interesting in this poll is the Conservatives are doing really well for the general election. They're doing quite well when we asked about voting intentions for the local elections in a couple of weeks' time and the Assembly, but you're not nearly as well as they are for the general election. And some of this suggests this is really about the specific context of the general election, and notably Theresa May's pitch for this as a Brexit general election and really going for, you know, the votes, the support of people who voted Leave in the referendum last year. If you look at the details of the poll, one of the really interesting things is in our sample, people who voted UKIP in 2015, only a third of them are now supporting UKIP. Two-thirds of them, pretty much, are now supporting the Conservatives.
Is that an indication that the manner in which Theresa May is handling Brexit is in line with the overall spirit of the Leave campaign?
Yes. Since our last poll in January, UKIP support in Wales for a general election has fallen by more than half, and it seems that pretty much all of that support has gone straight to the Conservatives. The Conservatives are also tapping quite effectively, I think, into people who voted for other parties in the past, but who are strongly pro-Leave. So I think, you know, this looks like, at the moment, a very effective pitch by the Conservatives. One other thing which is working in their favour is Theresa May herself. According to this poll, she is currently the most popular party leader, UK level or Welsh level, of any in Wales. We've seen a pattern for the last few years where Carwyn Jones and more recently Leanne Wood have been clearly the most popular figures. Both of them have now been overtaken in the popularity ratings by Theresa May in Wales.
That is truly extraordinary, isn't it? I can't remember the last time that there was the case that the UK Prime Minister, let alone a Conservative UK Prime Minister, would have been the most popular person.
Well, I think it would have been when Tony Blair was at the height of his popularity, maybe right at the beginning of this century. What we're seeing now, though, is a Conservative UK Prime Minister being the most popular political figure in Wales. And that is, I think, pretty much wholly unprecedented, certainly for all the points in time which we have any polling data. I can't find anything like this.
Just out of interest, how does that compare with Margaret Thatcher's peak popularity?
Well, 1983 was Margaret Thatcher's greatest election victory, the year after the Falklands War and fighting against rather hapless Labour Party led by Michael Foot. I mean, we don't have detailed data in Wales for that year on Margaret Thatcher's popularity, but we know that's the year in which the Conservatives won 14 seats in Wales. If the Conservatives were to achieve the sort of results suggested by a new poll, they'll be winning more than 14 seats in Wales. And not only seats like, say, Bridgend, the First Minister's seat in the National Assembly, which the Conservatives last won in 1983 for Parliament, you know, that would go to the Conservatives, but even seats which we haven't seen go to the Conservatives for decades beyond, you know, the 1980s. The Conservatives would pretty much hoover up all of the seats in North East Wales and pick up quite a few of the Labour seats in South Wales as well. And, you know, we could say if the results in this poll are repeated in the election in 6.5 weeks' time, we could very well see the Labour Party being defeated for the first time in a general election in Wales since 1918.
So it's another quiet year in politics then.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty extraordinary. Now, some people will say, well, it's only one poll, it's only, you know, it's several weeks from the election. And of course, that's true. And it is often the case that when a party has a sudden spike upwards in its electoral support, that that then fades over the course of the rest of the campaign. We saw that with the Liberal Democrats in 2010. But, you know, even if the Conservatives were to lose a little bit of this upward spike in support, you know, they're 10 points ahead of Labour in Wales in this poll. They can slip a bit and yet still produce, might still finish ahead of Labour, which would still be something of quite historic magnitude. I think we also need to say, well, you know, what is it about the rest of the campaign which might change people's minds? Thus far, the Labour Party campaign under Jeremy Corbyn, you know, Mr Corbyn has been enthusing, I think, existing supporters of the party, or some of them at least. But it doesn't seem very likely that he's going to be appealing to the undecided voters or the waverers to any great extent. I mean, is 6 more weeks of Jeremy Corbyn on the TV screens likely to help the Labour Party? Frankly, that seems very doubtful.
In previous pre-election briefings, you've produced an index of dissimilarity between England, Scotland and Wales. Does this indicate an increasing similarity, particularly with regard to Wales and England?
Possibly. I mean, there hasn't thus far been any great pattern in general elections of Wales becoming more similar to England. Wales has a degree of distinctiveness from English voting behaviour, which has been roughly at the same level going back many decades, and that hasn't really changed. What has changed in recent times, in recent elections, is that Scotland has become a lot more distinct from English voting patterns. But actually, one of the interesting things we've seen in the polls thus far in this campaign is that actually, even in Scotland, we're seeing a significant rise in support for the Conservative Party. Partly, I think this is due to Ruth Davidson's very effective leadership of the party there and her sort of cornering of the market for being a clearly anti-independence party. But I think also Theresa May's pitch for Brexit, there are at least some voters in Scotland to whom that is pretty appealing. So we're seeing, you know, the Conservatives doing well everywhere in mainland Britain, you know, even in Scotland by their historic standards, and also in Wales and in England. This does seem to be a broadly cross...
You've suggested that one of the reasons why Conservative support is up is the conglomeration of the former UKIP and Leave votes sort of around the Conservative vote. On the other side, though, it doesn't look like the Liberal Democrats, for example, have benefited from a similar pattern with Remain voters.
No, I mean, the Liberal Democrats since 2010, the 2010 general election, have done particularly badly in Wales. In both the 2014 European election and the 2015 general election, their vote share was lower in Wales than in either England or Scotland. And of course, last year they were wiped out as a National Assembly for Wales party. And if we look at the pattern, say, of local government by-elections, yeah, they've been making quite significant gains in England in recent months, but not doing much in either Scotland or Wales, bar the odd occasional result here and there. I think it's one of the reasons for that is probably that in both Scotland and Wales, the pro-Remain side of the argument, you know, there are competitors for that mantle. So, you know, Plaid Cymru and the SNP were clearly pro-Remain parties, or broadly pro-European parties. Much of the Labour Party in both nations was also very clearly pro-Remain. Indeed, the Labour Party in Wales was almost unanimously pro-Remain. So the Liberal Democrats' ability to sort of corner the market on Remain voters from the referendum last year is rather, you know, that's rather more inhibited, I think, in Wales than in Scotland. I suppose one other thing we should probably say about the Liberal Democrats in Wales is, you know, they don't obviously have any particularly effective leadership or machinery. The Welsh Lib Dems lost pretty much all of their staff after their crushing assembly election defeat last year. They also lost their very effective Welsh Party leader, Kirsty Williams, who is now still in the assembly, but effectively functioning almost as a Labour government minister. The party leader in Wales now, Mark Williams, has a very good profile in his own constituency of Ceredigion. While we know he can be a very effective constituency MP, we've yet to see any sign that can be an effective Wales-wide party leader.
We used to talk about a thing called target seats, but it now looks like they're almost all in play in this election.
I think given what seems to be the strength of the Conservative tide, I mean, that will condition the behaviour of all of the parties. For the Labour Party, this is clearly a defensive operation. Now, they've got to try and hold on to as many of their existing 25 seats as possible. And I think things like, you know, regaining Cardiff North, regaining the Vale of Glamorgan, I mean, you can probably forget that. They may even have to effectively pull out of one or two of their existing most marginal seats to try and hold, you know, the next line of defence. For Plaid Cymru and the Liberal Democrats, I think it's going to have to be about targeting a small number of places. So for Plaid, I think it's holding their three existing seats, targeting on its morn against a weakened Labour Party, though also possibly fighting maybe a significant Conservative challenge. And then for Plaid, possibly one or at most two other seats, maybe Ceredigion, maybe Llanelli, or, you know, one or two other possibilities. For the Liberal Democrats, I think, you know, they're looking at holding Ceredigion and targeting maybe a couple or three of their former seats, so Cardiff Central, for instance, which they used to have, a strongly pro-Remain seat fighting the Labour Party. That's a possibility. Their two former seats in Powys, Montgomery and Brecon and Radnor, these might be possibilities, but again, they're fighting the Conservatives, so those are going to be very difficult. I think, you know, for those parties, it's going to have to be just targeting resources in a small number of places. For the Conservatives at the moment, the challenge may be knowing how far, you know, how wide to cast the net. You know, there are some seats which are very obvious potential targets. Do they go, if the polls continue to look really positive for them, sort of to the next line of things, what they would have once regarded as almost impossible stretch targets? Do they seriously start to look at those? As we saw, for instance, say with the Labour Party in 1997, when we had the first Blair landslide, when things are changing to such a large degree, it can be very difficult to know what is realistic and what is just, you know, starting to get a bit silly. And, you know, judgment calls will have to be made by all of the parties, you know, in a context of considerable change, maybe. What do we say, okay, this is gone, or this is safe, this is still up for grabs?
So based on this poll, how do you see the distribution of seats going to the House of Commons after the election?
Well, if you just do the standard uniform national swing projection of this current poll, we have the Conservatives winning the majority of the seats in Wales. Yeah, for the first time since the 1850s. Now, obviously, there's 6 weeks of campaigning to go and things could change. But as I said, you know, the Labour Party have won the majority of seats at every general election in Wales from 1935 onwards. There must now be a very considerable possibility that that record will come to an end in 2017.
And finally, UKIP. The leader of the group in the Assembly has said that they will be looking to stand candidates in every constituency. But looking at these results, their support seems to be falling off a bit. Post-referendum, where many are questioning the whole purpose and existence of UKIP. Could this be their last election?
I don't know if it'd be their last election. I mean, whether UKIP still exists as a functioning entity or not, you know, we don't know. But this does look like a very difficult election for UKIP in Wales after a few years when they've actually performed very strongly. You know, UKIP may well stand candidates in every seat in Wales, but the likelihood of them actually winning a constituency in Wales is probably only marginally greater than the likelihood of me becoming the next Pope.
Well, we'll look out for the colour of the smoke coming out the chimney on that one. Thanks very much for your time, Professor Scully.
Thank you.
What a pleasure to introduce a new voice on Golai, Professor Laura McAllister, Cardiff University. Nice to have you on board.
Nice to be here.
We have just had a preview of Professor Scully's polling ahead of the snap election that's being called. And while it's just one poll, to use Professor Scully's words, he has described it as Wales may be on the brink of something truly seismic. And what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's the potential for that. But given I spent most of last week apologising for lots of us getting it wrong in previous elections, I'll just add a note of caution to that. And I'm sure Roger will forgive me that because he's the pollster here, not me. But I think we need to be cautious, obviously, at this stage, just after the election campaign has kicked off, almost 6 weeks away from the vote that matters, as the parties will tell us. And before we get all those wonderful tweets about how wonderful a reception they're all getting on the doorstep. Now, I've added that caveat just because I've said that publicly already. I think, you know, we need to eat a little bit of humble pie in terms, not, and I don't mean pollsters alone here, I mean all of us as commentators, because we didn't predict the result of the last general election sufficiently accurately, and neither did we really get other big events, let's say, over the last few years correct. Having said all of that, of course, you know, this is a very serious poll and does suggest that we could be seeing something very, very, very significant in terms of tectonic plates shifting in Welsh political and electoral behaviour. I think that's hugely, hugely significant, and I wouldn't be surprised if we are going to see something substantial here.
It seems that this poll is somewhat in line with some of the other polling that's been done by other organisations across the UK recently. So if we sort of accept that this is some kind of a trend, how would you interpret the results for the Labour Party in Wales?
I think they're potentially disastrous. I think in many respects they replicate a trend that probably goes right the way back to maybe the 2007 Assembly election. And what I mean by that is we've had very little serious challenge to Labour in terms of its hegemony since the beginning of devolution, and I don't think that's a healthy position for any political party to be in. And now we've seen a whole combination of factors that have made this election a hugely poisonous one for the Labour Party in Wales as much as it is across the whole of the United Kingdom. Contextually, I think the way in which recent elections have gone, particularly the previous general election in 2015, was to see Wales replicate some UK trends. So we saw the increase in the Conservative vote, we saw some old Labour seats like Gower and Vale of Clwyd go to the Conservatives, albeit with very small majorities. And we saw the rise of UKIP, certainly in terms of percentage vote, you know, even finishing slightly ahead of Plaid Cymru in that election. And I think really this has paved the way for a pretty disastrous set of circumstances for Welsh Labour. First of all, the Welsh Labour brand is not strong enough to withstand the UK Labour brand, which of course is poisoned by an unpopular leader and a divided party. So whilst Carwyn Jones no doubt will try to sell Welsh Labour's appeal on the basis of it being a distinctive party here in Wales, campaigning on a distinctive manifesto and with a history of governing over the last 18 years, the reality is the people of Wales in a UK election will see the leader of Labour as being Jeremy Corbyn, and they're as put off by him as they are in other parts of the United Kingdom. So that's problematic. I think as well, the fact that there is no single opposition to Labour here might just prove even more difficult because whilst we've seen a huge growth in Conservative support, which of course is in line with UK trends, and not much movement for the other parties around that, there may well be very localised campaigns which benefit some of the smaller parties. I think we're talking there about how Plaid Cymru does in Ennismore, maybe in one or two of the Valley seats where it has a strong candidate and so on, and the Lib Dems in seats like Cardiff Central. So the danger for Labour is it could be outflanked as well in a couple of those current seats it currently holds by some of the smaller parties as well as by the Conservatives.
If you were to describe what would be a good result for the Labour Party in Wales, would it be enough seats to secure the future of the existing set of MPs? Is there a number that would make it justified? Or if there's a failure, would that be a criticism of Cadwyn Jones? Would that be a criticism of Jeremy Corbyn? Whose reputation would be damaged by that?
The first point, initially, given what we know, I think being able to maintain a majority of seats in Wales, that is 20 plus, would be a pretty excellent result for Welsh Labour. That's a big ask, I think, in the current climate, not least because a lot of the seats that it does hold have fairly smallish majorities. And, of course, the concept of a small majority will change in this election, I think, because the Conservatives will be targeting seats that maybe have 4,000 to 7,000 majorities, Labour seats that have that kind of majority. And, of course, that puts quite a lot of Welsh seats in that bracket. So I think getting anywhere close to maintaining a majority of seats would be a pretty stellar result for Welsh Labour. In terms of blame, well, it's probably too early to talk about this because let's see how the campaign plays out and the extent to which Cadwyn Jones is able to stamp a distinctive Welsh identity on a campaign here. If he does that and it still fails, then I think clearly Welsh Labour will have to look at itself and the way in which it's been able to communicate its own seeming distinctiveness to the population of Wales. I'm not convinced that's really sunk in all honesty, because I think if you go to Labour seats, for example, that voted heavily to leave in the EU referendum, there was no real understanding that they had a different leader with a different outlook on Europe here in Wales. So I think, you know, that will be prevalent. But I think the key factor in any failure will be the fact that Labour is approaching this election as a divided party. And what we all know is that divided parties are most disliked by the public. And I don't think it's very hard to conceal such a divided party, isn't it, when we have people like Lord Kinnock saying he can't see a Labour government in his lifetime.
In that context, and particularly in light of that, the strength of the Conservative Party right now, what is it that they're doing right? Is it that unity of purpose around, presumably, Brexit being the tentpole of that unity?
Let's make a distinction, first of all, between the Welsh Conservatives and the Conservative Party in the UK, because I'm not sure that the Welsh Conservatives can take a great deal of credit for where they are at this point in time. I think the UK Conservatives can take that. And what's happened is that the Welsh Conservatives are basking in the reflected glory of having a leader that is clearly the most credible Prime Minister at this point in time, or so the public feel. They can also bask in the reflected glory of having a party that now, I think, is ready to approach the Brexit negotiations, depending on the results of the election, with a fair degree of unity. I'm not sure, if I can't think of anything that the Welsh Conservatives have done dramatically well since the last UK general election 2 years ago that would allow them to claim credit for this. If you think about their assembly election performance, it wasn't anything like as good as they would have hoped for. Whilst they've gained AM since then, that hasn't been to do with anything connected with the party, really. It's to do with rousing other parties. So I think we've got to make that distinction in the first instance. If you look back to the 2015 election as well, what the Welsh Conservatives did very well was to target its campaign on seats where they felt they could almost go under the radar of a UK-wide campaign and make a breakthrough. And they did that with a little bit of serendipity, of course, because, you know, timing is everything. 27-odd votes in Gower and, you know, not that many more in seats like Vale of Clwyd show how close these things were. But they fought a very good campaign. I don't think this time they'll need to fight that good a campaign to win seats.
What's really interesting in Professor Scully's numbers here is there's actually a drop in support for the Liberal Democrats. We're talking about being targeted in a campaign. How will the Liberal Democrats approach this election in Wales?
I think there's 2 points there. I'm not surprised at that result because I don't think yet the Lib Dems have gained any real traction for the way in which they will fight this election. I think they will be the party that will benefit most from the campaigning period if they're going to make the breakthrough that some people are predicting they will do. So I think that's a concern for them at this point in time. The other point I'd make about the Lib Dems is I think it's easy to exaggerate how much progress they are likely to make in this election. They'll clearly make progress. I mean, they've got a handful of MPs at the moment, so anything that pushes them up into the teens even will be progress. But I think, you know, clearly they're being more aspirational than that. They're presenting themselves as being the voice of the people who voted to remain in the European Union. I think that's problematic, though, because in the seats where it needs to make breakthroughs, for example, in Cornwall and Devon, lots of those constituencies voted to leave in the referendum. So you're superimposing a kind of challenging party status in those seats with a Brexit position of the voters. Now, who's to say that people's minds won't have been moved slightly and possibly the people who voted Remain will coalesce behind the Lib Dems? But I think that's why it's hard to accept this position that the Lib Dems are going to make dramatic breakthroughs simply on the back of an EU referendum.
Particularly when you look at one of their target seats would be Cardiff Central in Wales, and that's currently held and potentially likely to be held again by a very pro-Remain Labour MP. It's almost like the Leave side have coalesced around the Conservative Party, but the Remain side still seems broadly spread amongst a number of different parties.
I think one of the interesting factors that will be revealed really over the course of this campaign is the extent to which there is a Welsh national general election going on, a UK general election going on, and a series of local campaigns in constituencies. And I suspect at this moment that it might well be that third option. That will actually benefit all of the parties in different ways because, as you say, Cardiff Central is an unusual constituency. It's a constituency which is much more metropolitan and mixed. I suspect most people in Cardiff Central who are Labour voters wouldn't have the same problem with Jeremy Corbyn that maybe voters in Merthyr or Blaenau Gwent or even Bridgend might have. And that makes the challenge, especially of the Lib Dems, more difficult to harness, really, in terms of winning the seat. Then you've got seats like Ynys Môn, where Plaid Cymru is the main challenger. And I think they're a very different set of election themes will play out. And that's why seat projections, obviously, at this stage are so difficult when we're talking about very different trends across the whole of the nation.
Talking briefly about Plaid Cymru there seems to be no change. It's almost like when other parties are going through some fairly extreme fluctuations in the apparent numbers of support that they have, the Plaid Cymru position seems somewhat neutral, and it appears to have been that way for some time. Any thoughts about why that might be?
Well, you've been quite kind there in many respects to Plaid, of course, that, you know, in some elections they've actually gone backwards as well, which is not a great position for a party that's fighting elections in Wales against a party that's been in government for 18 years. You know, if you want conditions ripe for change, then those are the conditions you'd be after, really. So I think it's a question of it's now or never for Plaid. I mean, put it in context, you know, Westminster elections are inherently problematic for Plaid and always have been. But equally, in Scotland, the SNP has found a way to challenge effectively and to capture seats in a Westminster election. In fact, more successfully than it has in a PR election to the Scottish Parliament. So that poses questions. We're not saying for a moment that for, you know, Wales and Scotland are identical or the SNP and Plaid are identical. But the SNP has been able to position itself as the not only the challenger to Labour, but the dismantler of Labour, ultimately. And now, interestingly, of course, the SNP faces its main challenge from the Conservatives, not from Labour. So I think for Leanne Wood and Plaid, there has to be a breakthrough in this election. I mean, if Plaid comes out of this election with 3 seats again, then I think people will rightly question its relevance in a situation of of some peril to Wales, really, post-Brexit. I think there has to be a stronger argument from Plaid that than simply this is about defending Wales. I think it has to be more on the front foot. It has to be showing that its form of social democracy slash socialism is more appealing to disaffected Labour voters than it would appear at the moment. Having said all of that, I do think that Plaid might just surprise people because it will be able to target its resources in a couple of seats if it gets the right kind of candidates and the right kind of workforce, where it might just slip under the radar of a British election and be able to polarise it into a kind of which is the best defence and which is the best voice piece for Wales in a post-Brexit environment. That's its best hope, I think, of making progress.
And one of just to wrap up the coverage of the parties here, one of the things that's very interesting looking at the numbers here is previously, in previous general elections, there has been talk about the UKIP vote splitting what the former Conservative vote. Actually, it appears here that UKIP voters are actually going back to the Conservatives or joining the Conservative bloc amongst the voters. What future for UKIP in Wales?
The election has come at a difficult time for UKIP, hasn't it, is a kind way of putting it, really. Leadership problems, party disunity amongst its group in the National Assembly, but probably more importantly, post-EU referendum, no clear purpose as to what UKIP's role is. Before the EU referendum, it was able to piggyback on the simple, unequivocal position of we want to leave the European Union. And they used that very effectively in the 15 election and in the 2016 Assembly election, and then, of course, very, very successfully in the EU referendum. The problem now, of course, is that in terms of credibility, hardly anyone is likely to see UKIP as having an influential role on what happens next with Brexit. And so it's really hard to see what UKIP can actually do to capture any votes other than, you know, possibly a kind of rump in some key constituencies. I was listening to someone from the New Statesman talk recently about the idea that UKIP could become a kind of English nationalist party. But even that, really, I think, is probably too soon in its development to embrace with any enthusiasm. And, of course, that's going to go down far less well in Wales for obvious reasons than it will across the border. So at the moment, it's hard to see where UKIP goes. I wouldn't be surprised if they use the excuse of not standing against pro-leave MPs to minimise the number of seats it fights across Wales, because in terms of foot soldiers, I think the party's struggling.
One last question. We have a little bit under 6 weeks of campaign left to go. What do you think the narrative of this campaign is going to be? Is Brexit going to be the defining issue? Because we've seen some other stories coming up about, for the first time, as far as I'm aware, Labour were less trusted with the NHS in some polls than the Conservatives, and the NHS has been a banker somewhat for the Labour Party for years. Do you think that Brexit is going to be the narrative of this election, as Theresa May has framed it, or will there be other issues, the popularity of Jeremy Corbyn and other, you know, perhaps the continued Scotland independence referendum issues north of the border?
I think there'll be three possible big issues. I mean, clearly Brexit is the foremost one. The leadership and the suitability for prime ministerial office of the candidates is the second one. And I think in that one, you know, the straight head-to-head between Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May can only go one way, really. And then thirdly, there's the debate about public services. And I think that's really difficult because in Wales, if Labour wants to move the debate onto that terrain, it's problematic because it's a devolved area. And of course, Labour is in charge of the NHS and education and transport and economic development and so on here in Wales. So I think it will depend what gets traction early on. I can't see that anything other than Brexit and the quality of leadership and the credibility of leadership will dominate. But who knows? You know, we can all look back at other general elections where an issue has gained an early traction and has then become an almost significant factor in an unexpected way. I think the constitutional future of of these islands is there in the background, but it's not a sexy issue and it's not one that the public necessarily feel passionately about. But it's hard to avoid when we have the situation in Scotland and the delicate nature of any potential decline in SNP support. Because I think if SNP support does decline substantially, and there's no sign that it will at the moment, but if it does, then it makes the case against a second Indy referendum more credible from a Conservative point of view. If it holds up, seats will go, no doubt, but if the vote holds up, then I think it makes the case for a second independence referendum unassailable. And that, of course, then throws into the question, what happens for Wales?
Thank you very much, Professor Laura McAllister. If anybody would like to find out more about you, what you have to say, do you have a Twitter handle that they could follow?
I do. Very simple, at Laura McAllister.
And you, do you still blog on Medium?
I do, and I'm going to be blogging a bit more, hopefully with a few guest contributors as well, who will be talking about some of the kind of political themes underneath the issues that we're talking about, specifically in some constituencies across Wales.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Golai, a Cardiff University podcast. Subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from to have the next episode download automatically.